File 70. L. Now begins the great and final revolution. As soon as the Jew is in possession of political power, he drops the last few veils which have hitherto helped to conceal his features. Out of the democratic Jew, the Jew of the people arises, the Jew of the blood, the tyrant of the peoples. In the course of a few years, he endeavors to exterminate all those who represent the national intelligence, and by thus depriving the peoples of their natural intellectual leaders, he fits them for their fate as slaves under a lasting despotism. Russia furnishes the most terrible example of such a slavery. In that country, the Jew killed or starved 30 millions of the people in a bout of savage fanaticism, and partly by the employment of inhuman torture. And he did this so that a gang of Jewish literati and financial bandits should dominate over a great people. But the final consequence is not merely that the people lose all their freedom under the domination of the Jews, but that in the end these parasites themselves disappear. The death of the victim is followed sooner or later by that of the vampire. If we review all the causes which contributed to bring about the downfall of the German people, we shall find that the most profound and decisive cause must be attributed to the lack of insight into the racial problem, and especially in the failure to recognize the Jewish danger. It would have been easy enough to endure the defeats suffered on the battlefields in August 1918. They were nothing when compared with the military victories which our nation had achieved. Our downfall was not the result of those defeats, but we were overthrown by that force which had prepared those defeats by systematically operating for several decades to destroy those political instincts and that moral stamina which alone enabled a people to struggle for its existence and therewith secure the right to exist. By neglecting the problem of preserving the racial foundations of our national life, the old empire abrogated the sole right which entitles a people to live on this planet. Nations that make mongrels of their people, or allow their people to be turned into mongrels, sin against the will of eternal providence, and thus their overthrow at the hands of a stronger opponent cannot be looked upon as a wrong, but, on the contrary, as a restoration of justice. If a people refuses to guard and uphold the qualities with which it has been endowed by nature, and which have their roots in the racial blood, then such a people has no right to complain over the loss of its earthly existence. Everything on this earth can be made into something better. Every defeat may be made the foundation of a future victory. Every lost war may be the cause of a later resurgence. Every visitation of distress can give a new impetus to human energy. And out of every oppression, those forces can develop which bring about a new rebirth of the national soul, provided always that the racial blood is kept pure. But the loss of racial purity will wreck inner happiness forever. It degrades men for all time to come. and the physical and moral consequences can never be wiped out. If this unique problem be studied and compared with the other problems of life, we shall easily recognize how small is their importance in comparison with this. They are all limited to time, but the problem of the maintenance or loss of the purity of the racial blood will last as long as man himself lasts. All the symptoms of decline which manifested themselves already in pre-war times can be traced back to the racial problem. Whether one is dealing with questions of general law or monstrous excrescences in economic life, of phenomena which point to a cultural decline or political degeneration, whether it be a question of defects in the school system or of the evil influence which the press exerts over the adult population, always and everywhere these phenomena are at bottom caused by a lack of consideration for the interests of the race to which one's own nation belongs, or by the failure to recognize the danger that comes from allowing a foreign race to exist within the national body. That is why all attempts at reform, all institutions for social relief, all political striving, all economic progress and all apparent increase in the general stock of knowledge were doomed to be unproductive of any significant results. The nation, as well as the organization which enables it to exist, namely the state, were not developing in inner strength and stability, but on the contrary, were visibly losing their vitality. The false brilliance of the Second Empire could not disguise the inner weakness, and every attempt to invigorate it anew failed, because the main and most important problem was left out of consideration. It would be a mistake to think that the followers of the various political parties which tried to doctor the condition of the German people, or even all their leaders, were bad in themselves or meant wrong. Their activity, even at best, was doomed to fail, merely because of the fact that they saw nothing but the symptoms of our general malady, and they tried to doctor the symptoms while they overlooked the real cause of the disease. If one makes a methodical study of the lines along which the old empire developed, one cannot help seeing, after a careful political analysis, that a process of inner degeneration had already set in, even at the time when the United Empire was formed and the German nation began to make rapid external progress. The general situation was declining, in spite of the apparent political success, and in spite of the increasing economic wealth. At the elections to the Reichstag, the growing number of Marxist votes indicated that the internal breakdown and the political collapse were then rapidly approaching. All the victories of the so-called bourgeois parties were fruitless, not only because they could not prevent the numerical increase in the growing mass of Marxist votes, even when the bourgeois parties triumphed at the polls, but mainly because they themselves were already infected with the germs of decay. Though quite unaware of it, the bourgeois world was infected from within with the deadly virus of Marxist ideas. The fact that they sometimes openly resisted, was to be explained by the competitive strifes among ambitious political leaders, rather than by attributing it to any opposition in principle between adversaries who were determined to fight one another to the bitter end. During all those years, only one protagonist was fighting with steadfast perseverance. This was the Jew. The Star of David steadily ascended as the will to national self-preservation declined. Therefore, it was not a solid national phalanx that, of itself and out of its own feeling of solidarity, rushed to the battlefields in August 1914. But it was rather the manifestation of the last flicker from the instinct of self-preservation against the progress of the paralysis with which the pacifist and Marxist doctrine threatened our people. Even in those days, when the destinies of the nation were in the balance, the internal enemy was not recognized. Therefore, all efforts to resist the external enemy were bound to be in vain. Providence did not grant the reward to the victorious sword, but followed the eternal law of retributive justice. A profound recognition of all this was the source of those principles and tendencies which inspire our new movement. We were convinced that only by recognizing such truths could we stop the national decline in Germany and lay a granite foundation on which the state could again be built up, a state which would not be a piece of mechanism alien to our people, constituted for economic purposes and interests, but an organism created from the soul of the people themselves. A German state in a German nation.